Welcome, everybody. It's 9 o'clock. We'll go ahead and get started with the June Board of EMS meeting. We'll go ahead and start with approval of the minutes. Anybody have any comments or concerns about the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion to approve.
I'm so moved.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay, moving on. Public comment. Joe tells me that we do have one from Chris Cannon. So we'll go ahead with that one.
Hi, Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
We can. We're a little quiet, but we'll wrap things up as we can.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I just want to talk about our EMS providers here in Kansas and to ask for your help. The men and women of Kansas EMS are facing real struggles, whether that's substance use, depression, PTSD, anxiety, or cognitive health concerns they're afraid to disclose. These are not character flaws, they're human consequences of a profession that asks people to absorb extraordinary pain year after year with very little structured support. Right now, the Kansas EMS provider who recognizes they need help has no clear, safe pathway to get it. No confidential program, no monitored return to practice, no soft place to land. Kansas nurses have that. Kansas physicians have that. Kansas pharmacists have that. Our EMS providers don't. And many of them don't know where to turn. I believe this board can change that. What I'm asking for is a program modeled on what already exists for other licensed healthcare providers in Kansas. Something confidential, comprehensive, and designed to address substance use, mental health, and cognitive health together. A program that helps providers get well and return to the work they love while also keeping patients safe. So my specific ask today is this. Please place the development of a Kansas EMS provider health program on the agenda for your next meeting. Assign a working group. Give us a path forward. We don't need to start from scratch. The models are already here in Kansas. We just need your commitment to build one for EMS. Our providers are asking for help, and I'm here today to ask on their behalf. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. We also have Dave Williams from, or Dave Johnson from Reno County EMS.
Mr. Chair, my public comment will
simply be limited upon discussion of the spare ambulance regulations if we enter into that and planning an ops if that's allowed.
Yeah, that would probably, if that works, that would be fine. We can recognize you then. All right. And Frank Williams.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and the board. My comments would be limited to that as well. I didn't see on the agenda the planning and operations update. We had some pretty good discussion yesterday that we'd like to continue today.
Yeah, we're going to add all the committees into the agenda there. Okay. Moving on to standing items. Doesn't look like we have executive committee variances. Let's go ahead and move on to that planning and ops discussion from Shane here.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. We did have a pretty good discussion yesterday during planning and operations committee meeting regarding, just for everyone on the board's purview, there's been discussion over several regulations specifically related to inspections and everything tied to the inspection process for ambulance services and inspecting ambulances. The last board, there was a group of vested individuals, I guess is the easiest way to say it, that was created to work with the executive director of the board and the planning and operations committee that have met multiple times. I believe five times over the last several weeks, and developed, recommended, or suggested changes to quite a few of the different regulations that would impact ambulance inspections. Through that process, there's been very good discussion, good ideas, some ideas that probably, and some other suggestions that probably need some more thought as to whether they should be eliminated or modified in the in those regulations. Yesterday during the Planning and Operations Committee, we did ask the committee members did ask the executive director to move forward with putting the marked up version of all those regulations into a draft form to bring back to the committee, as well as potentially to the board, just for review to see what those would look like in a draft form rather than the marked up version of strikes and edits and everything, just to make it a little cleaner to review. There are a few things in there that for myself personally, I think are a little questionable whether they should be removed. I think one of the suggestions to be removed was the financial information, as well as was the other reporting mileage annually for each ambulance. Statistically, those are, I guess from my standpoint, are pretty good things to have a record of annually on what across the state of Kansas, what EMS transport, what that picture looks like on expenditures, revenue, cost recovery, as well as the mileage side of things. Seeing, I think, Joe, you mentioned that right now, if you look at it as an average, it's close to 100,000 miles per unit statewide. Without having that information collected, we would not know that information. If elected officials at the state level wanted to know that information without being able to collect that at the renewal process or inspection time, especially, I guess most of that's collected at renewal when the service renews, would not be able to collect that information to have that readily available covering the entire state for every licensed ambulance service. So I understand, being a service director previously myself, I understand that it can be time-consuming sometimes to collect that information on the renewal side, but I think it is good information to continue collecting, personally speaking. But there's good discussion. I think that moving forward, I think that we can certainly, the Planning and Operations Committee working with that group and the executive director will certainly come up with language that eventually will end up coming back to the board for everyone's comments and or to move forward or not. So this may be a good opportunity for either Dave or Frank for their public comment. I don't know, Joe, is anything else you think committee-wise, or the committee members that were here yesterday, from your purview, if any comments?
Nope.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. Dave Johnston, Reno County, also with Region 3. So a couple things to comment. I'll hit real quickly on the request to remove a couple of those items. One, on the financial piece on that, the reason to remove it is it's inaccurate most of the time. There's different reporting formats for different agencies on the expenditures coming in. I think it's proved out that the agencies have showed a profit for years in and out, and that's problematic. There aren't agencies creating profit out of this. So I think it's erroneous information that gets passed on through that. If they want information on reimbursement, that's available from either the counties, the municipalities providing that. I think there's Medicaid funding information, things along those lines. That's one of the reasons it was discussed and asked to be removed in there. Same thing was asking about the accuracy of the mileage, of whether it's really painting a true picture or not, or if it's just very inaccurate information. So there are things other than just the spare unit discussion throughout this. There's several requests as the regs are open to adjust as we go. So we were able to provide quite a little bit of feedback on it. Of course, all of this circulates out of the discussions that came out of investigations and the inspections that were referred to investigations. So very robust discussion on how violations are now being handled. The piece where they've now been moved into from where they're now listed as violations and moved to the investigations committee, and discussion over using the sanctioning tool on that. So very, very robust discussion on that. And just we're looking for clear guidance on that. It's kind of come through the discussions yesterday. There does not seem to be defined policies on the inspections on how they're conducted. We just want kind of the rule book more so than just the reg on how those are going to be conducted and what they're looking for. And then the path through investigations. And it was vetted out yesterday. Things are perhaps going to be handled different in the future than how it was laid out in April. But we just ask the board that you guys kind of insist on those policies, those developments, so we can see a written workflow of how these are going to move through if they're going to be referred to investigations. And I will tell you from the standpoint that I have other service directors contacting me, the insistence that this move to investigations for service inspections, we want to find a different solution. We would love for you to find a different solution, especially as we start to move new regs through that are helping address some of the issues that are being found in the inspections. So coming in the next year, you're not set up with a whole list of violations that occur and then are referred to investigations to be decided upon. We understand that we can't make being told we can't just ignore regs if they exist. We have to wait till the new ones are in effect, but we have to find a solution for that gap year that's going to occur if we're going to put new regs into place. So I'll stand for any questions you have of me on my feedback. If not, thanks.
Mr. Chair, may I make a comment?
I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
I think that the committee is taking the right step forward, but I would reiterate something I've reiterated in the past, is that the purpose of having an ambulance inspection should never be necessarily punitive. I think the whole goal is to make ambulance services better. And particularly with the number of volunteer services we have, and I can tell you from doing consulting work all over the country, that a lot of times you get to be the ambulance director because you missed the meeting. Or you happen to be the best paramedic, which is the wrong reason to promote somebody to be the director, because EMS is a business. Make no mistake about it. And so, you know, I've said this before many, many years ago, before any of you were where you are today, we actually had technical people within the Board of EMS that were assigned regions, and that was their job, was to go out and help people get better. Maybe John remembered this, mm-hmm. or maybe you remembered this, but they had people that worked for the board that were technical assistance people, so that's whole goal was to go out and help people get better, both with quality assurance, education, inspection issues, to make sure everything was right. So I think, and this is my advice to all of you out there as well, and we've talked privately about that, I think that's the focus we need to have moving forward with looking at the inspection process and maybe get away from and obviously, you know, the last meeting we had where you had the sanctions was I think not only a surprise but not overly well received. And so I think there's a better way, and I think we are on the right step to do that. So thanks, Dave.
Okay, Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank Williams, Butler County EMS, and also the Kansas EMS Association. Agree with Dave's points and to Terry's point on the technical assistance. I think KMSA as an organization can stand ready to help in that avenue of filling those gaps and being able to provide some of that with the allowance of the board. I think the timeline associated, which was touched on, is another big concern as we go into the next year of inspections and the second or third violation, specifically for us on our spare units. And how does that look in the purview of the board and the investigations committee? So that's what I had to add.
So for board members that are, if you have, maybe you have questions on what they're referring to, just as an update to all those things. So the way things are listed now, if a spare or a ambulance that's not staffed, ready to go out the door, does not have all the equipment, every single piece of equipment necessary to run the call, just as what their protocols would say, that technically that they are in violation of the regulation for equipping the ambulance. So some of the discussion that occurred yesterday is that while we can't just ignore the regulation that's currently in place that requires that information, regardless of the status of that ambulance, there are provisions that have been used and continue to be used by the investigations committee of stating, yes, a violation occurred, no further actions being taken, simply because we understand, and the agency that I work for is in that boat as well. We've got ambulances that do not have every single piece of equipment, such as a mechanical CPR device, except for the ambulances that are staffed every single day. The reserve ambulances, what we call a reserve at our agency, is a spare ambulance that's equipped with pretty much everything but that mechanical CPR device, and it can respond to calls whenever is needed. But technically, based on our protocols and what's been approved by our medical director, those ambulances are technically in violation of the regulation because they do not have a mechanical CPR device on that truck, even though it's listed in our protocols and our equipment list. Virtually every agency in the state of Kansas is in that boat in some form, whether it's a cardiac monitor, whether it's a ventilator, whether it's another piece of equipment that to put that reserve ambulance in service as a frontline ambulance has to be switched when they make it, when they take that frontline ambulance out offline. So the investigations committee has that ability to acknowledge that, yes, technically a violation did occur, but there's no action being taken on that violation. There was a suggestion yesterday as well of the variance process. That is something else that can be discussed and looked at. We allow for the executive director to have concurrent authority with variances now, such as lettering on a spare ambulance or a loaner ambulance. If you have an ambulance that's out of service and are waiting on a new ambulance to be built and a loaner ambulance comes in from that manufacturer, rather than taking the time to letter it with your agency's name on it, the executive director has the ability, given by us, by the board, to give a variance to that service to not have to go through the expense of lettering that ambulance for 60, 90, or 120 days, whatever that time frame may be that they have that loaner vehicle. So that's another avenue potentially to look at some of these things while we're working through the regulatory process and changing the regulations. But again, it's going to take time. And unfortunately, that's just the way that this process works, is that we can't come back with a draft that we all feel is good next month and hope that it's approved by the end of the year. That's just not how it works, unfortunately. So I don't think, unless anybody else has any.
Any other board members have any comments, questions?
Joe, I don't know. Did I touch on everything from planning and ops and kind of where things are at now? Okay. Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah.
Just a question for the uneducated here. I mean, this is a pending action. This is not unique to other regulatory moments in government. So when there's a pending action that countermands something that's currently in process, isn't there some pathway to address that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I yesterday kind of used the analogy of you know, speed limits. We may know the speed, you know, they may change, KDOT may be changing the speed limit on an interstate in the near future, but today the speed limit's this, and if I get caught speeding, I don't not get a ticket for speeding because in 2 months I would have not been speeding, but because the speed limit was going to increase, but I'm still going to get a ticket today because today the regulation states this, or the speed limit is, you know, 75 and I was doing 80 rather than the speed limit being increased. So I that was part of the discussion yesterday, Dr. Selberg, of trying to figure out something, still having to recognize that the regulation still states what it states, until the regulations changed. And I don't think that we can be, that we can avoid that and doing so. And for the lawmakers in the room, I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, and something for discussion on your part too, probably on that side of things. So, Sam?
Dr. Silberg, I think how agencies operate under these types of circumstances is that you can't say that the violation didn't occur, but you exercise discretion not to impose a penalty for it.
I think not to be rumor mongering or anything, but I think the board can really get in trouble if we say, oh, that's fine, we're going to ignore this, and we're not going to. So I think Sam's point is well taken, is that at least until we get this all sorted out, we still have to enforce the current regulations and opt for the comment that a problem has occurred, and then, but maybe otherwise we're going to recognize that a problem occurred, but we're not going to take any action. Because I think from what I've heard, the legislature takes a dim view of randomly making decisions outside the regulations.
I was just going to say, yes, we do take a very dim view indeed. It would not be well received. I think my colleagues can concur on that.
Yes, Senator Feck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit of my thoughts into this thing. Sometimes we're overregulated, you know, with what goes on. And then when you set this up so tight, you can go find somebody that's going to find a mistake somewhere. So somehow common sense has got to flow into this. You'll laugh at this, but I was in the bank one time and a guy passed out. And so I'm working on it, and my boss was running around looking for a first aid kit. So, you know, sometimes you're on a decision, you got to make them. I worry about you make it so tight that is the board going to get sued? Are we going to get the EMS locals get sued? You know, when you set these up and say this is the way it's got to be, if it's so complex, there's got to be a fine line to that somehow. So I think in reviewing that stuff, when we sit there and we go out and say, well, you know, you didn't do this, well, you've kind of set it up on their shoulders for them to get sued, I would think, Sam, wouldn't you? And so when you set these things up, we got to be careful about who's going to get sued on what and what can we afford to do. So that would be my thoughts to throw to this. And how we go forward with this, you know, I concern myself when we go and say, well, this didn't happen, this didn't happen. Do we have to go out and inspect these real careful until this gets done? You know, let's don't go dig a bunch of stuff up that's going to make it more complex than it already is. So sure. That would be my thought.
I think the purpose and the goal of the group that's working on the regulations now and moving forward with that is to give some latitude to agencies and to the board and board staff, just updating things. I think that's where this is at, is a lot of these regulations haven't been touched or had anything done with them in a lot of years. Some of them, it's probably time that they be updated and have some language changed to be more reflective of what's currently occurring in the state. But others there still has to be some sort of regulatory process and accountability left on EMS agencies. And, you know, some of the things that were identified in that, to go back to the April board meeting, and some of the things that were submitted to the investigations committee for review are expired medications, expired supplies that have expiration dates. And some of those weren't just it's only been expired for 2 weeks type of thing. It was long-standing items that were expired. I know that the argument's out there that there are medications that are still the efficacy of them is still valid years after they expire, but that doesn't change the fact that the current state of medicine in the United States is that you don't give something that is got an that is expired as a medical provider. That is just not something that should be occurring, and that's where things are at with some of those things in the regulations and what was submitted to the investigations committee. So,
Joe, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to opine on the tightness of the regulations. I want to remind the board or maybe educate the board. State of Kansas is actually light years ahead of the nation on this one. There are still numerous states that have very specific lists of equipment that have to be present on every single ambulance. Kansas does not. Kansas allows that to occur by the service saying, hey, here's the stuff that we're going to keep in order to execute our protocols, which is the right way to go about that. Additionally, on that same realm, there are states that do have statewide protocols as well, which we do allow local sides of protocols, which is what fit our system to say, hey, because we're allowing 165 different entities to potentially run 165 different scenarios, they should be able to come up with 165 ways at least to fix that and be to solve that. So there's a lot of flexibility written into our regulations that are not seen, especially with our contiguous states, is going through. And so I think we're moving that bar quicker than some of our others are, but just want to make sure that doesn't get lost as well within this.
Any other comments regarding this? Okay, well, hearing none, let's go on to education.
Okay, we had a brief meeting yesterday for education. One of the items we brought forward was old business on KAR 109-17-1. This went to the AG's office, and they made a change or reiteration at the bottom that they wanted added to that regulation. And it basically just restates what's in the statute, but they wanted it added. It doesn't really change the application of this. It's just going to start its process over. We kind of talked about it, and the general consensus was to have Joe go ahead and move forward with that with the change, and I believe he'll be working on that, moving it back to wherever it goes, and we'll go ahead and move forward with that. Was the decision we made. Then new business, we talked about a new CE pathway, and this was just brought out there, and I want to make sure everybody understands this is not a replacement of continuing education. This is another pathway that would be available for a service or a individual or whatever to come through a different pathway to where it does skills validation and also cognitive knowledge validation through a process of a portfolio type like we do with the initial educations. And you can validate different specific skills. This is throwing it out there for having another pathway available to people. We've got the online. We've got the sitting in the classrooms, and this gives it another avenue to where you could utilize it that would be state supported and recommended and validated. So it sounds like a great approach. I think we're probably going to be reaching out for some suggestions on this eventually. Joe said that we can move this forward and thought we had the time to go ahead and gather some information on this. If you guys have got some assistance that you want to offer for that, we'd open up the door for that. And Joe, do you have anything to add on that? Yeah, it's not real specific now, and the reason it isn't is because when you go in with those type of specific things, I think you're going to wind up having it to where it's too tied down. I think it's better to keep it open and look at all the possibilities we can come up with, and I think this would be a good avenue to offer to people, especially the unaffiliated people that aren't working with ambulance services, that would give them a pathway to where we could make sure those skills don't degrade while they're not actively working in EMS. Following that, I don't believe we had anything else. Joe's going to work forward on this one, and we adjourned our meeting. Do you have any questions? Okay.
Okay. Thank you. In the absence of Director Wheatley, Joe's going to give the investigation report.
All right. Board, your investigations committee met on April 16th, 2026. They had four items under their consent agenda. Two of them were for failure to disclose criminal convictions. The other two were emergency orders of suspension, one for an EMT charged with involuntary manslaughter, the second for an EMT charged with multiple counts of sexual exploitation of a child. And in both cases, in both of those two emergency orders, that emergency suspensions issued pending the court outcomes and further board action. So those are all delegated actions. They're able to be taken by me, but reported out through the committee and then ultimately up to you guys. On their discussion cases, they had quite a few. The first dealt with the protocol violation. Three paramedics, it was a complaint that was received regarding patients' rights were violated. There was no evidence to support that. However, during the investigation, it was found that the medical protocols utilized were not followed appropriately. So there was a... The committee took action to note the violation occurred, but to have no further action on that one, I believe, is due to no repeat violations over the period of time since that occurred. There was a case involving inadequate patient care with two paramedics. Patient that was in respiratory failure, in that case, the violation was found as well. Recommendation to accept local action. Strong local action was taken on that one to ensure that that was addressed to protect the public. And then there was also a case involving a cardiac arrest and unprofessional conduct. The violations did occur due to length of time on that one. There was a one-year probation given. There were seven providers involved with a scope of practice and staffing violation. So it's an improper delegation of advanced skills. The staffing violations were confirmed. The fines there for six of the providers were for a $25 civil fine to be levied. The seventh provider was a $50 civil fine, and that was the one that delegated their skills off. There was a case heard about substandard pediatric care. The protocol deviations that were alleged were confirmed. Interestingly enough, in this case, the patient outcome was the desired patient outcome was achieved. However, because those deviations were confirmed, they did attempt to use a device that wasn't indicated for that child. There were violations found with $25 civil fines issued or levied on those as well. There was a case involving misuse of EMS resources. In that case, the committee moved to dismiss the case. There was an application that was denied. Prior license was revoked for unprofessional conduct and falsification. The recommendation on that was to process, so I guess the application was not denied, to process the application but limit the ability to provide patient care until July 1st, 2027. In that instance, this was an individual who had license action taken upon another occupational license that also dealt with protecting the public. And so they were actually prohibited from returning to that for the potential concern of the public's protection until July 1, 27, so we mimicked their language on that. There were two additional ones, and they were mostly technical in nature. One was for a failure to timely report personnel changes. It was a first offense. There were corrective steps taken to ensure that it didn't happen again, so the committee voted to accept local action in that one. And then on the training program violations, there were four organizations that failed to submit required student rosters on time. The violations were noted, and again, they took action to prevent that from recurrence. So that local action was accepted as well. Final activity that they had was the sanctioning tool, which is already referenced. Just that structured penalty tool is tested against the 135, the inspection-related violations during calendar year 2025 to improve consistency. When and if a fine would be determined to be applicable. So the results that were shown within the agenda were illustrative only and not proposed penalties at the time. The board did say to go forward, find that the violations occurred, and that no further action would be taken upon those due to the testing of the tool. And that was the investigations committee. It was a long meeting.
Does anybody have any comments? Yes.
Thank you. I just have a question for clarification, I guess. So we do criminal background checks on everyone, correct? And that's pretty scary that if they don't put it on paper, it can get missed. How long does it take for us to figure that out, and why didn't we catch that initially?
So was that in relation to the first ones, the emergency orders?
Yeah.
Those are actually crimes that just occurred. So because we had the criminal background check in place, those were reported through to us, and then we took action based upon what just happened. Yeah. Yeah. No, I absolutely would be shocked the other side.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you talk investigative, the dog issue, would that come under this category with the canine? I've heard a lot of stuff about that. I'm just wondering what happened, where we're at, how that came out.
Sure. So we did receive the public complaint about the individual that did ultimately innovate a dog. That was the misuse of EMS resources. That case was heard, but the case was dismissed by the committee. At that point, it was the fact that the diversion of agency equipment was the potential violation with that the committee just dismissed. So I will say on those lines, the board probably needs to make a strong determination. I know with what popped up on the social media side of things, we should probably be looking at introducing legislation to clearly allow the fact of being able to render aid to animals on that side of things, whether that's police canines. Most of the laws that I've seen out and about the country right now are related to service animals, but mostly are related to dogs on that side of things. But I would say that there's plenty of things that we could grab from for that if the board feels that that should be done, which was pretty clear from our investigations committee that should be considered as being okay. We should probably have a law that says that needs to be done.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. David.
They make devices for animals. In fact, we carried them on our ambulances and often on house fires, they'll bring a dog or a cat out, and they make masks for those, and we carried those on our truck. I think it's kind of a sticky wicket whether you want to how deep you want to go in the weeds with regulating that kind of stuff, and having the vet, you know, all the veterinarians having their thoughts on that would probably be pretty helpful. I mean, I love my dogs more than most of the people I know, with the exception of Dr. Selberg. I'm pretty fond of him, but you know, I wouldn't be afraid to pick my dog over the neighbor sometime if I have to save him. So anyway, I think we need to, you know, tread lightly with doing that, because they do make devices, and maybe again, that's an educational thing, because you know, I don't think we bought our stuff. I think it was provided by the local veterinarians.
Yeah. Our fire department's got them.
Yeah.
They were donated.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my comment. Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing that I would add to that, to service dogs, we spend a lot of money to get them, and they do a lot of good things for us. So to me, that kind of fits in a special category, in my opinion. But human life, I do think we need to address that, you know, and have a good conversation, pull everybody into that, and see what we can do with that, because I don't want the guy out on the truck trying to decide what should I do. Hopefully give him some guidance on that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
So,
yeah, Dr. Selberg.
Good thoughts out here. What's the next step for some movement for just putting that as a investigation of topic, not investigation of action. But.
I'm sorry, what? I'm.
What?
I'm,
there's a lot of. Hey, we should do this. We should do this. Yeah, we should do this. Hey, okay, let's move on to that. Well, so are we doing something or are we not doing something?
Well, that's. I guess that's something for the legislators to determine as to how to how to make a recommendation.
Regulatory or statutory?
It would need to. There would have to be a statute authorizing us to head since it crosses.
Oh, yeah, Dave.
Yes, we already have a draft in place based off of the
based off of Arizona statute. It's a pretty good one. We have Sean Gatewood, our lobbyist, working on that already. He'll be reaching out to try and find someone to move it through.
Okay. Thank you.
Let us know if you need something from us.
Thank you. I guess one other comment about this case is, I kind of heard that the Board of EMS has taken some heat regarding our decision on this to dismiss the case. And so, anyway, but I think finding that would certainly help to get a statute in place to sort this out so it doesn't happen again. So, thanks.
I've received a phone call personally wanting to know why we took no action on the provider and why the case was dismissed.
Senator?
So I don't know the details to that, so that's why Hilton's investigated.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing I was going to ask, have we hired any new inspectors?
That would be a question for Joe as to what our inspector status is.
Okay, so we have two inspectors. I have one that's currently vacant.
Okay. How do we decide how many inspectors we need? You know, when you say two or five or one, how do you decide that?
So right now it's just on the agency side of things, looking at their scope of what they do, which is inspections, audits, investigations, and ensuring that the workload stays where it needs to be. So in years past, we've had a single investigator and two inspectors. Now we've combined all three of their positions to do all three things. I just have one vacancy in that group.
All right. Finished up with that discussion. Joe, you want to go on with office update?
I will. I will be very quick moving through this. First item is, is listed in your agenda. I just like to ask for consideration of moving the October meeting from October 1st and 2nd to October 8th and 9th and to be able to get that out and going. So EMS World Expo occurs going into October 1st and 2nd. I know we have two board members that typically are present, if not required to be, at that. And so just a consideration of that, if that's a...
Does anybody have any concerns with moving our board meeting in October to the 8th and 9th? Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, regulations that are in process. One, lots of movement over the last 7 days. So just a reminder that if you're wanting to see where the regulations are at in the process, we do post that on our public portal side of things, which is a licensure side. So our EMS providers, that's their typical means of communicating with the office, but that there's a tab up there. It's called Regulations and Revision. And the current version of the regulation that's going through the process is always present there for folks to click on and take a look at. So 10911, our definitions regulation, was cleared by, received their stamp from the AG's office on May 29th, so just last week. It's with the Division of Budget right now for the economic impact statement approval. Our authorized activity regulations, 10933 and 10934, so that's the EMR and the EMT, cleared through AG's review as well on June 3rd, just this week, and it joined the AEMT one that was cleared back in November at the Division of Budget for their economic impact statement approval. Our four educational standards cleared the AG's review on June 2nd, and they're at the Division of Budget for the Economic Impact Statement approval. You just heard about 109.17.1 from Director Ralston, and so that added language was placed in that yesterday afternoon and pushed over to the Department of Administration, so it's waiting for its review. I haven't got an email back yet that it's cleared, but I would anticipate that this one will go relatively quickly in that process, as long as there's not a whole lot ahead of it. And then finally, the three regulations to address utilizing the EMS compact personnel are on your agenda for consideration of adoption and going that. That's 26, 27A, 211. I do want to just remind the board there were two pieces of legislation that moved through this year that impact the regulatory revision process. So House Bill 2719 is the first one. This requires a mandatory early notice procedure, which means 15 days prior to us taking the draft initially to the Department of Administration, we have to publish a public notice and request comment. And then after that period of time, then we can submit that in to the Department of Administration. So that notice ultimately has to be posted on our agency website. It has to be submitted to the Secretary of State for their publication of it. And then we were advised it has to be sent to each of the 165 legislators. So it does allow us to no longer have the hearing record as part of the economic impact statement. So at the tail end of this whole process, we go through the public comment period. It ends in the public hearing. We were required to take that sheet of paper back to the Division of Budget for them to stamp and make sure that the hearing is quote-unquote certified. They're never present at those hearings, so it seemed kind of odd that they were ensuring that there were no attendees or one attendee or such. That process is now disconnected that so that we don't require that stamp, and that's done by the hearing officer at the time for the hearing certification. So for the three that you'll hear later, the hearing certification on that, we had no one in attendance other than the hearing officer for it, so that was done and taken care of, and that certification is done. The second bill, Senate Bill 30, went into effect May 7th, so no longer Senate bill. I just don't know what law number it has now with it. It says any regulation that materially changes an occupational license regulation must first get legislative approval to do so. So this is going to require the bill to go through, or sorry, require the regulation to go through the process and initially be heard before the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules and Regulations, and then after being heard by that Joint Committee, the agency's required to submit a written proposal to Kansas Legislative Research Department that addresses about six things. An analysis and explanation as to why the material change is necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare, an examination by the agency of potential less restrictive measures, an analysis by the agency as to whether the requirement is the least restrictive means to achieve its stated purpose, which also includes a ranking by the Legislative Research Department, an examination and comparison as to whether and how other states regulate the profession, an examination by the agency of the effect the change will have on job creation or retention, and then finally, an examination of the costs and benefits associated with the requirements. So in this case, 109.33, 34, and 35 are three authorized activities regulations. All impact or would be considered a material change, which means even though we could be looking at a potential for voting on those in October, we would need to wait for the legislature to ratify that before those could actually go into effect. Some question as to whether that can be done during the interim when they're not in session. And what we're being told right now is it would require the legislature to be in session, so that's going to push that out to at least a January potential before those would go into effect. The other healthcare entities were exempted from that bill, and I think probably for the reason that, like this, I mean, this is to add IV Tylenol at the AEMT level. I mean, that was one of the recommended changes that would we've been waiting since November of last year to try to get through. So it's things like that, I think, was the reason why the healthcare entities were exempted. It was just an oversight that we weren't considered healthcare in the thing. And it was a bill that was brought up about a year after it originally went through. So that's it on the regulation side, unless there's questions on that. All right, I do want to note the three abstracts that were mentioned during our last meeting are physically present here in the room. So we were honored to receive awards upon two of those three. The one on possible attainment of innovation proficiency benchmarks gained us an honorable mention. Again, it's in the back of the room. And then our one on the 20-year evaluation of your educational incentive grant program earned us a third place award. This is the NASEMSO abstract competition that we submitted those in. We are submitting all three to the International Science Symposium that will be at EMS World Expo in October. So, with the office, busy time of year. We've got courses ending, students testing, students looking to gain certification, ambulance services sponsoring organizations going through their renewal process, ambulances getting renewed, everything else. My staff has been doing a phenomenal job keeping those on track. We're still well on target to have 100% of our ambulance services inspected this year, as well as 100% of the sponsoring organizations audited. So as I'm talking, the inspections, audits, and the like, I just want to let the board know I'm going to be purchasing and implementing the use of body cameras for my inspection staff. So if they go out, this is to protect them and then ensure consistency in their approach and then my ability to investigate any potential concerns that might pop up upon my staff related to their inspection and auditing duties. But I think we're to a point where we're hearing that there are inconsistencies in the process. This would allow us to see what those inconsistencies are so that we can address those going forward. We had some email changes related to our licensure system. So the software that our vendor uses to send email from our licensing system has been updated. So it now requires users to be able to opt out of broadcast emails. So this is no different than probably any other thing that you've signed up to go and get. You have the ability to opt out of receiving email communications. Where this becomes a little problematic is this is our primary means of communication with our licensees. So we are giving them the ability to opt out of being communicated to by us, which on a global level. So think if we're going to go reach out to say, hey, we've got this open for public comment and we're trying to reach all 10,000 providers, that's when we would send a broadcast email out to say, hey, you all need to be aware of this going forward. It does not stop them from receiving specific communications related to actions that they've done with us. So if they put in an application and we're trying to communicate with them, they would still receive those as go. They don't get an opportunity to opt out of those. So I think I stated that correctly. All right. All right. So any broadcast message that we do send will have a link available at the bottom if the person chooses to opt out of those. And then they have the ability to opt back in if they like. With more fun and exciting news, I am very pleased to announce that we have a linkage project that we brought to completion, getting outcome data on patient care reports back into our state system. It's great that the data is flowing. Now, if we could get the content to not be not applicable, I think would be the next step in that. But the data flow is working and it's great. So right now, the linkage that we developed was with HCA. It deals with, it's a nationwide connection. So it's any Kansas ambulance service that transports a patient to an HCA facility. We're able to link that report back and receive the outcome data from HCA's system without any type of user intervention going on back and forth there. So it's able to link the record completely, which is what we've been looking for. So at the end of May, we had roughly about 8,300 patient outcomes reported back into us. So again, that's a huge win, something we've been trying to do. It demonstrated pretty good success. Again, it allowed us to recognize that sometimes that data needs to be cleaned up a little bit on the not applicable side. We'll find out where to tweak it, but the flow is the hard part of establishing. And then the last thing I have on the office updates actually under our new business, so I'll just defer to then ask if you guys have any questions over any of that.
Okay, moving on. Yes, Senator Fagg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That body came kind of out of my ear. So, and the thought comes to me is to the local EMS kind of do a self inspection, maybe do a report annually that would come in to your office. And then you guys could kind of spot check. You know, how often do you have to inspect? That puts them where they've done their own inspection kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body cam, why would we need a body cam? Now, that would be my question. Could you give me an example where that would be an issue?
Sure. So it was a conversation that started within the SEMSO as we were starting to ask. Again, Kansas not unique in this whole thing. There are more complaints coming on to activities of state office staff when they're out interacting, and things are being taken out of context. So New Jersey has had body cams in place for probably about the last 5 years for all of their inspectors going through and such. And they said it adds just a degree of, again, those abilities to be able to look to see what they're physically seeing when they're there and present, and to help on the investigation side of things as complaints come back towards their staff. And being able to see what happened, what occurred, and going through. We're hearing that there is a lot of discrepancy. I mean, that's the communications come through planning and operations in our process, but we have nothing to validate the discrepancy, because the end results are looking very consistent coming through. This would be one more step of us being able to see what those inconsistencies were as they're being applied. To the second piece on the self-evaluation, that's been tried a couple times on through accreditation bodies, which it has value when done, and it's done, can be done very well. It also has the potential to not be able to see everything, but that's where I think where you added that additional safety step of the spot check later to just make sure that it wasn't that I could get to show you this component of it, but I'm not going to show you what's happening over here because I'd rather not. So, yeah, a good idea.
Okay, any other comments or questions? All right, I think we'll go ahead and move through the adoption of these three regulations. So I'll turn that over to Joe for 10926.
I will need a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt adoption of KAR 10926.
Okay, it's been moved. Second. Any further discussion? Okay, we'll proceed through the vote.
Does this have to be a roll call?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, all right, for the adoption of KR 10926, Adams.
Aye.
David?
Aye, Purdue. Yes, aye.
Yep. Oh, sorry, Commissioner David.
Aye.
You know, how did we not catch that before going through this? Essex?
Yes.
Fagg?
Yes.
Fayman?
Yes.
Fouskado? Horning?
Aye.
Pearson?
Aye.
Powers?
Here.
Ralston?
Aye.
Sawyer Clayton?
Yes.
Selberg?
Aye.
Wheatley? That passes.
Okay. Move on to consideration of 109-2-7A. Take a motion for adoption.
I'd make a motion to adopt KAR 10927A.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Okay. Move to the vote.
All right. For the adoption of KAR 10927A, Adams.
Aye.
David?
Aye.
Essex?
Yes.
Fagg?
Yes.
Fayman?
Yes.
Fouskado? Horning?
Aye.
Pearson?
Aye.
Power?
Yes.
Ralston?
Aye.
Sawyer Clayton?
Yes.
Selberg?
Aye.
Wheatley? That passes as well.
Okay. And finally, moving on to adoption of 109-2-11. Accept a motion to approve.
I'd make a motion to approve KAR 109-2-11.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Go ahead with the vote.
All right, for the adoption of KAR 109-211, Adams?
Aye.
David?
Aye.
Essex?
Yes.
Vag?
Yes.
Fehman?
Yes.
Vasquez? Horning?
Aye.
Pearson?
Aye.
Power?
Yes.
Ralston?
Aye.
Sawyer Clayton?
Yes.
Selberg?
Aye.
Wheatley? That passes as well.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's move on to new business. Joe would like to discuss a new project he's undertaking for the board.
That's a very nice way to put that. At the KEMS conference August last year, I gave just a quick board update / state of the state of EMS in Kansas. Historically, I'm pretty brutally honest with that group. I just don't sugarcoat things when I speak to them. There's no reason to. They should hear it. So I accept responsibility for actions that we've done over the year. I've shared with them the direction of the board. Last year wasn't any different with that. So as I advise the attendees that I was encountering problems and problems I needed to address, but I needed their help to address those. And that was the ask of that group, was to say, hey, I need your help. So that talk, that discussion kind of became the quote unquote ugly baby conversation that you might have heard as it's go through, because what I told them is, I mentioned that people don't like hearing that their baby's ugly, but I was definitely imploring them to tell me how my baby was ugly, because without knowing, I didn't know how to make it prettier. So as you guys are very well aware, I don't have just one ugly baby. I've got the pleasure at times of having three. So baby one is the agency and the processes that we use. Okay, very, very clearly. Baby two is the board and the processes that you use. And then baby three is just EMS in Kansas in general. So kind of have the responsibility of all three of overseeing as we're going through and such as that's going through. So I did ask the attendees that when they pointed out their ugliness to try to offer a solution, or at least say, hey, this might be a way that you fix it, or geez, Joe, I just have no idea how you're going to fix that. Just acknowledge that they didn't know. But if they were just saying that your baby's ugly to be mean, to just keep the words to themselves, because that was just being mean. So I took that same talk out to the regents, and just beginning right after that to the region meetings, made reference to it on a couple of our service director briefings as well. And we're, you know, 9 months down the road, which I didn't really realize the significance of that until I started thinking about the whole baby thing again. So maybe this is the new baby coming. The ugliness that was identified or shared with us, and the opportunities for folks to comment, is we received less than five. I'm not sure that that's a valid representation of what's out there and what's coming back. So I absolutely appreciate those individuals that took the time, took the effort, reached out, said, hey, you know what, Joe, your baby's ugly, and this is how it's ugly, and this is how you can fix it. One of those came in just as recently as April and coming through. And so definitely appreciate those folks reaching out and doing that, more than they'll probably ever realize. They took the directive to heart. They had the guts to come directly to me to point out that ugliness, and either provided it or flat told me, I have no idea how you fix this. That honesty was very much appreciated. So during the same time frame, I was following everything that was occurring with the Board of Nursing. One, because they're our neighbor on the 10th floor, and just good neighbors and we care about them as well, two, because they're in the healthcare side of things. And that's really the bigger side of it, is that they're the largest healthcare occupational licensing entity in our state. They have over 70,000 licensees that they're managing and such. And so they've got kind of a, you know, the, before the tie with the Moorlands side of things on that, we care about what goes on with our fellow agency. The bigger thing there was that I wanted to make sure that I was analyzing the issues that were being brought up in comparison to them as a state regulatory agency and making sure we weren't making the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. And trying just as an opportunity to learn from what they were doing and what they were potentially not doing and making sure that we weren't going to make those same mistakes as they were going, as they're going through. So, and just reflecting upon our own practice. So to use the board, the public that's here, I mentioned it earlier, I have an ugly baby with my agency right now. It's not where I want it to be. I've recognized the fact that it's ugly. I'm doing what I can to try to fix what I can. My staff are awesome. My staff are amazing. Their hearts are absolutely in the right spot. They're great human beings. They're striving to do the right thing. They're trying to follow the rules that are set before them. They face a constant attack. That's part of our job. We're a regulatory agency. No one likes us. That's okay. They're striving to provide excellent customer service to the point at which at times they're oversharing on things. And I say oversharing only because they're trying to find an answer and trying to seek out the right thing to do, and they're just applying the wrong situation. So because I've got great staff and I've got their intentions going in the right spot, that means that the problem ugliness that's out there is probably lying within the system, within the processes that we perform, or within the procedures that we're following, or it's with me. So I know I'm not liked by some. I know that decisions that I make anger people. I'm probably tolerated by some too. And then there's people that absolutely enjoy what I do. Quite frankly, I'm a head of a state agency. All of that's valid. It would be ridiculous to expect that a decision made at my level is going to be accepted by all. 30 years of refereeing things, I know that every time I blow a whistle, I'm ticking off half the people that are present.
It's a 50-50, right? 50-50 yeah. Proposition.
Yeah. It's going to happen every time. So I spend a lot of time self-reflection, and looking through that. I'm going to be harder on myself than anybody else could ever be in going through that. So I'll focus on my side of things and looking and self-reflecting on that. However, what I do need to focus on are our agency's processes and procedures. So I'm initiating a full internal review of the agency, which is all processes, all procedures that we perform. The review itself is going to identify the process that's currently in place, all of the steps to, one, ensure that it's currently complying with Kansas law as written, and two, suggest areas which could be improved upon for compliance, efficiency, or ease while maintaining the safety of the public, and then three, it's going to include identifying any Kansas law that's impeding us to do any type of improvement. I think that that three-prong approach and going through that will help identify where we need to fix things in going through and how to do that. So as alluded to yesterday and again this morning, I've already started this review with the investigations process and looking through it, because that was one of the very large points of consternation that's occurred over the last month and a half, 2 months. And so that's where we started on that side of things. So an end product of the review is, as you watch these go through, it's going to be to have some sort of informational circular available that people can grab and kind of look at and say, hey, that's the process, those are the procedures that are involved, and then try to make that as digestible as we can. I would anticipate, with that being completely internal on side of things, I can probably lean a little bit on making that digestible to some AI assistance, but probably more along the lines of I've got a couple colleges have reached out with their marketing folks that would help and do that at little to no cost to the agency of trying to make that information go out. So the second component to this, and where you come in, I need the board to consider having or directing or initiating a 60-day public comment period for anyone and everyone to identify those pinch point areas or areas where they believe improvement is needed or necessary. That just helps us focus a little bit on those things and prioritize which processes, procedures are going to go through. My suggestion is that notice of public comment period to be posted in the Kansas Registered, emailed to all 10,000 plus of our licensees, sent out to all the legislators, and then also sent out to our services, sponsoring organizations, and again, as an information gathering tool. So to the public listening today, this would be your opportunity. Please, please, please don't sit quiet in the shadows. Please reach out and say what it is. Don't be afraid to comment. Comment. I know we're failing. Let me know where. The third component, and this one goes, Joel, to you as the chair, I just ask that you either identify a task force of board members or assign the executive committee to help review the comments that are received to look at those processes and review the findings of the internal review. In conjunction with the comments received, make any type of recommendations to the board as to processes that they believe need to change and how to go about that. So at the end of the day, I want to make sure that where our agency is at is where the board wants us to be. I want to make sure that we're following all the state laws that are there, that are in place, and the procedures are clear and easily identified by our public. That's the desire of this process. We'll fix the pinch points as we can, as we go through, but even developing a roadmap on how those things can be done, I think, is enough to help the public understand that we're addressing this as we go through. So it's an extreme measure. It's going to take a lot of time, but that's okay. It's absolutely necessary, and it's something that probably should be done, and too bad that we have. It's extreme because we probably should be doing this incrementally over time, but you got to start somewhere, and starting with blank slates the best thing. So more than happy to answer any questions that you guys may have, but that's the gist of it.
Kind of sounds like a huge undertaking, and it sounds like a really good idea. I just I guess I worry that's you have other things you're doing day to day too. How do you make time for all this?
Well, it's important enough that I think other things that I do will get deprioritized, and this will become the highest priority. So,
all right, yes.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for being so transparent, and what you're doing is awesome, I think, because the Kansas Board of Nursing went through what they did. It should get our attention. So I really appreciate you giving me attention to it that it needs. I guess I would ask, what kind of time frame are you looking at for this? How long does a internal review last? When would the 60 days of public comment happen? Is that still to be determined?
If we're told to green light that, I would start the public comment period as quickly as I can get notice in, which would be about 2 weeks. I would love to say that I could have the whole thing done by August back to you guys to go through. I'm not sure that that's realistic. It'd probably be September, October, knowing that I've got a budget to also plan in the midst, which love this side of it, but we have to continue the ball rolling too. So getting that budget out will take a little bit of time.
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to make one comment. One of the things you know, thanks for sharing everything that you went through. There is a commonality here, and the commonality through everybody that you're talking about is the love for EMS, and that's our common denominator. Now, how we get there and how we do that, there has to be accountability. And I think the working between the love and the accountability is where all of this stuff takes us. And I think that if we all can focus on the love for EMS, this will be a great undertaking.
Okay, any other comments? Seeing none, I believe we're up to our attorney, Sam Feather, to discuss some. Yes, actually, I would love one. Let's meet back in about 10 minutes at 10:25. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I got a couple quick things. We can do that when we come back.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks. We're going to go through some training from our attorney, Sam Feather, just to make sure that we're keeping close to all the rules, regs, and statutes. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Fagg, go ahead. Go ahead.
I already kind of talked to Joe, but just kind of let the board know. I asked Joe or if he'd be willing to talk to Ed Klump on that issue, and he's more than happy to. 911, whenever you call in Western Kansas, a lot of those people's not qualified to, as the ambulance is coming out, how you handle that over the phone if the wife's sitting there over somebody that got their arm cut off or something.
Right.
So we're trying to come up with a cost-effective, service-efficient way of handling that. So that's what Joe and Ed are going to get together. I've been working on this a couple of years trying to figure an answer. And I'm sure Joe might be a great person to get with Ed and get some ideas. So that's what
I think that's great. The town that I live in doesn't have the medical dispatch, and it's really disappointing.
and a lot of them can't afford it. That's what you run into.
Right.
So how do you, and the thought is trying to get something that might be statewide where you have that person know that the arm's cut off and I need help, they can push a button that goes into somebody that handles that all the time.
Sure.
What kind of new technologies help with that kind of thing. And then it'd be more cost effective. That was the thought process. So just wanted to let you guys know.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Joe would jump on that.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Well, Sam's looking at me. We better get going.
All right. I appreciate Joe and also your patience with me and allowing me to talk with you today. This is something that, you know, Dr. House and I have discussed probably for the last 2 or 3 years that it would be helpful for both incoming board members and also existing board members to have kind of a refresher course of, you know, what are the basics about being on the board? How's the board supposed to generally operate? What are your duties as being on the board? You know the process on how you got here, but now that you're here, what are you supposed to do? And for those who've been doing it a long time, are you actually doing what you're supposed to be doing, or are you just doing something else? And so to start, I'll try to be relatively brief. Most of these topics we could probably cover all day, but I'm not going to do that to you. So to begin with, you know, the genesis of a state agency, state agencies like this board are what's referred to under the law as a creature of statute, and that means that we exist wholly because the fine folks at the legislature made us. And what that means is that all of our authority as the board, all of your authority, is given to you by the legislature. You have no authority outside of what the legislature in statute said you do. Now, that's different from some places. So district court judges have some inherent power because of the fact that they're district court judges. You don't. If you don't have a statute that says you can do it, you can't do it. Likewise, if you have a statute that says you will do it, you must do it. You do not have the authority to waive the statutes that the legislature has put in place. Now, you have a statute that says you can waive your regulations under certain circumstances, but the statutes you must enforce. Make sure we're clear on that one. So then as you move through, what kind of tasks do you have? Agencies are granted a number of different tasks. They fall into one of two buckets normally. Those are quasi-legislative or quasi-judicial. Not all agencies have both. This one does.
quasi-legislative functions are functions in which you look to the future and say, we think the world would be better if, and then you create rules that do that. Those are your regulations. I know sometimes when we talk about the board and the board staff, sometimes people make reference to, well, those are staff's regulations, but they're not. Jed pushes forward the regulations that you all approve, and if you don't like them, they're yours to change. If you want new ones, they're yours to come up with. Joe works for you. I work for you. You guys are the ones in charge here, right? You're not an advisory board. You're an actual acting board, okay? So the next one are quasi-judicial actions. Quasi-judicial actions are actions in which you look to the past, you look to specific facts, and you make a determination as to what actually happened. And so those appear regularly in compliance and complaint cases, right? In which board staff comes and says, we think this happens. And you make the decision whether or not there's enough evidence to support that allegation. And then you conclude whether or not, if that allegation is true, does it violate a statute? Now, I want to note that we say, does it violate a statute? There is a statute that says that if you violate a board regulation, that's a problem, right? And so while we may in order say that you violated this regulation, it then says, which is a violation of this statute, right? Because what we really care about are enforcing the statutes that the legislature says we must enforce, okay? The quasi-judicial function operates a little bit differently than a civil case or even a criminal case. Process-wise, when board staff gets a complaint, either externally through the public or it generates one within itself, it just learns of something or it looks at the data and comes up with something, it opens an investigation, it will issue a report and recommendation. The report and recommendation ends up being sent to the investigations committee, which the board has delegated the authority to hear these kinds of things and to act as if the board itself in the entirety heard it. And those reports and recommendations say, these are the facts, this is the evidence we think exists, these are the violations we think are there. When they come in, I review those. I look and see if everything they've said is true, could I win that case if I had to take it to an evidentiary trial? If I say no, then I recommend that you don't approve those or recommend a revision. But if I think I can win it, then it goes through as normal staff's recommendation. The investigations committee is going to look at that. If they agree, then they issue an order. If they disagree and say that, no, we don't think there's any violations that occurred, or we don't think there's enough evidence, we're going to dismiss it. We still issue the order, and the order says we dismissed it because we didn't think there was enough evidence, or we dismissed it because we didn't think it was a violation. And we'll get to why we do it that way. But regardless, until there is an order, and that order is referred to under the law as a summary proceeding order, up until that point, whoever's the respondent or the affected, either ambulance service or provider, has no opportunity to provide input to the board. And sometimes that gets people a little twisted. And I think it's because they misunderstand how that process is intended to work. The best way to describe it would be as if you left here and you decided to go home and drive 180 miles an hour down I-70 to go home, and one of Topeka's or Kansas Finest pulled you over, you're going to get a ticket. And on your ticket, it's going to say, you can pay the fine, or you can go and call this number and you can have a trial and we'll hear the evidence, right? The summary proceeding order acts like that ticket does. One of the last things it says is that the order becomes effective within 15 days of your receipt of the order, unless you request a hearing. And if a respondent says, look, that's not what happened at all, I don't agree with any of those facts, or I agree that those are the facts, but I don't think it's a violation, then they have an opportunity to have an evidentiary hearing. They make that request to Joe, we set that up, and it acts just like your trial would on your ticket, right? But under the administrative procedure, Folks actually have more opportunity to be heard than you would in a normal criminal procedure. So first there'll be an administrative hearing in which evidence is heard and a determination is made as about what's right, what's wrong, what the evidence supported, whether it's a violation. And if the respondent doesn't like the result of that, then they can ask for the district court to review that decision. And if the district court comes to the conclusion that no, everything is correct, and the respondent doesn't like the district court's decision, they can ask for the Court of Appeals to hear that, right? That's one extra step than you would get in your ticket analogy, right? Normally, you go to the district court says, no, you did it or you didn't do it. If you don't like it, you get to go to the Court of Appeals. So the process actually gives respondents three opportunities to be heard if they don't like what happened. Functionally speaking, when the investigations committee meets, if a respondent is available and wants to make a comment, the committee allows them to do so. They're not required under the law to do that, but they do. And sometimes those comments are taken into consideration and viewed positively for the respondent. Sometimes they're not. But that's kind of an extra bonus that legally they're not entitled to, but the committee wants to give those folks an opportunity to be heard at least once before they issue the summary proceeding order. With that, moving into, so what are your duties as being a member of the board? So members of a state administrative board have fiduciary duties to the agency. What that means is that you have a duty of care. You have to act prudently and reasonably with the same diligence of an ordinarily prudent person. And that means you come to meetings, you review the materials that are provided to you. You engage in discussions and ask questions so that you can make informed decisions. You have a duty of loyalty. Members must show an undivided allegiance to the state agency and the public generally. This can be a little bit trickier for a board that's made up of folks who honestly are in the same industry they're regulating. And so there are going to be times where people on the investigations committee may have a case that come forward that involves their agency or one of their own employees. Their duty is to the board and not to their employer in those instances, right? Your duty is to ensure that the public, and what I mean public is the public generally, is what benefits, not your personal employer. If you're on multiple different organizations, you may be members of other organizations. You may even be on a board of another organization, but your duty comes to this agency first. Likewise, you have a duty of obedience. And what that means is, as members, you are required to strictly adhere to the state statutes and your own regulations and your own agency bylaws and policies that govern them, as well as state transparency laws like the Kansas Open Meetings Act and the Kansas Open Records Act. And so this duty of obedience comes back to this concept that you have to follow the statutes. You may not like them, but you're going to have to follow them. You may not think that in any circumstance that following the statute's just. Well, that's where you exercise your discretion in whether or not to issue a penalty or not to issue a penalty. But if a violation occurs, you have to say it's a violation, right? Nobody wants a referee who sees a flagrant foul and pretends it didn't happen. Right. He was having a bad day. He was emotionally wrought because of other issues, right? Your job is called balls and strikes. You got to call balls and strikes. So, and that moves us into the Open Meetings Act and Open Records Act. And we're not going to spend a ton of time on that. I'm going to try to get you out in the next 5 minutes, so bear with me. Open Meetings Act is applicable to this board. A lot of you are generally familiar with how it's supposed to work. As just a reminder, all agency business must be conducted in a meeting in which the public has the opportunity to attend. Where board members can kind of run afoul is, you know, not because you're having secret meetings in the other room and you're making all these decisions you don't want anybody to know. Where you're going to run into trouble
is, you know, you're talking to the person next to you and they have a good point, and then you talk to the person on your other side and you share that you talked to that person. And if you do that enough that you've talked to a majority of the board, you've conducted a serial meeting and you violated the act. The Open Meetings Act is one of those important ones to know, because if you are found to have violated the act, you personally can be assessed a civil penalty by the Attorney General's or the local county prosecutor's office. And I don't want you to do that. And I really don't want to have to defend it if I can avoid it. So as best as can, keep your discussions related to agency business to these meetings. In the event that you do, talk to your friends on the board about agency business. Don't share what anybody else tells you. Just keep it to what your personal opinion is. Periodically, you may get emails from me in kind of a mass emailing. It's one of the things that I will always say at the bottom is do not reply all. Because yep. If you did, we had a meeting and it was a violation once you hit that reply all. It's a convenience thing for me to do it that way. And more I'm trying to avoid putting you guys in a position where you may accidentally violate. Open Records Act is similar. That's not one in which you guys are going to have a lot of issues with. That's more of a Joe House kind of an issue and some of his folks. But generally, unless there's an exception, the records of the agency are available to the public. The underlying foundation of both of those acts is that good government is an open and transparent government. When we have discussions and I meet with you all in executive session, you will hear me say with regularity, we want to engage the public in a way that's open and transparent. That means we don't hide our mistakes. That means we don't hide the good things that we do. And if the general rule I follow is, if we all got hit by a bus tomorrow, whoever replaced us, would they know what we did and they know why we did it? And if the answer is no, we were not open and transparent enough. And so when we said earlier on, if there is a case that comes forward in which the board hears the facts and makes a determination that no violation occurred, we still issue the order, it's because we do open and transparent government. We issue the order that says, hey, this person accused somebody of doing something wrong, and we looked at it, and we didn't find there was one. Likewise, if this person accused somebody of doing something wrong and we looked at it and we found a violation, we're going to be open about that too, right? Not to shame anybody, but because we have a duty to the public to make sure they're aware as to what we're doing on their behalf, and in that result, the status of their emergency medical services that are provided to them at the community level. And so there's been some discussion about the board's shifting and with staff's kind of guidance on compliance issues and how we handle those inspections. Ultimately, the board can make a decision and create policies and procedures on what staff should look for, what staff shouldn't look for. It can create regulations that make that process easier for the services. That's all within your framework. What you can't do is hide the result of those inspections if you have them, right? That's not open and transparent. Obviously, services aren't going to like that, right? Because nobody likes to have their faults aired in public. But it's good for them that it is. It's good for us that it is. Just like Joe's willing to come and say, hey, I have an ugly baby and I want to fix it, we have the duty to enforce that on ourselves and to make sure that the entities that we regulate follow that same set of standards. 10:45. If you've got questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, we'll do this again next year.
Just a question on if it affects your company or whatever. If you have that happen and somebody on your EMS service has something filed against them and you're Investigations Committee, should you recuse yourself from the vote, or should you go ahead and vote?
So what I will tell you is that I am always hesitant to tell the board member that they should recuse themselves. The determination of whether or not you can vote in a manner that is unbiased is your determination as a board member to make. If you can do it, then you've been put on the board to do it, right? You're not fulfilling your duty if you recuse yourself from every decision, right? You were put here to make decisions. And if you can't make decisions because of bias, then you may want to think about leaving. But there may be instances in which you have a one-off in which you want to do that, and I won't ever tell anybody. I will say periodically somebody, board members may ask, well, doesn't so-and-so have some kind of conflict of interest? And the way that you get on the board is real clear. The way you get off the board is real clear. You can't bounce each other. And so if somebody has a conflict, the only real way to deal with that is you go to the governor's office, which is an ugly fight nobody wants to do. And so it's on you all to govern yourselves in that regard as best you can.
Sam, what about individual exposure on particularly what comes into mind is the Investigations Committee,
mm-hmm.
where decisions are made, adjudication essentially is made, and fines are levied without participation of the members that aren't part of that committee?
So generally, state agencies are going to fall under the Tort Claims Act, which is going to provide you protection from claims outside of kind of gross negligence type issues.
So Sam, we have no coverage as far as errors and omissions insurance, as we said on this board.
We do not have errors and omissions insurance coverage because you're going to be protected under the Kansas Tort Claims Act.
Okay.
Generally, state agencies outside of gross negligence type issues are exempt from being sued, and that covers also its board members. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you don't get sued. It's the defense that's used to get you out of it. That said, I don't know that the board or a member of the board has been sued in a while.
Yeah. How many?
17. So.
Mm-hmm. One other question Sam might have. When you statutes versus rules and regulations,
mm-hmm.
We run through 1,000 bills up there in 90 days. And that gets so complex in that area, it's easier probably to address a lot of stuff in rules and regs.
It can be.
So when we do things, I understand we got to do what the statute says. We probably ought to be looking for ways to make sure we can do rules and regs would be easier to handle. I just thought you might comment on that.
Yeah, so that's a valid point. Just functionally how... Right, how the legislative process works and how it interacts with the executive branch, which this agency is a part of the executive branch, is the legislature creates law. And those laws cover sometimes incredibly complex subject matter. And the general thinking is you can't be experts about everything. And so when you know there are experts in the field that's addressed under an executive agency, you give them the authority to create rules and regs to fill in the gaps, right? Using the example of the canine unit, because it's a good example, the statutes are real clear as to what the board's authority is, and they're real clear that it deals with human beings. There is nothing in the statute that would lead anybody reading them to think it has anything to do with animals of any kind. So, in those cases, what should an ambulance have in the back of it? What should inspections look like? What's the appropriate medicines that paramedics are allowed to use?
all of that's real clear in the statute that the board can issue regulations to address that. But when it comes to our EMS providers allowed to provide care to emergency service dogs or dogs in general, we don't have the authority to regulate it. And so that's a statutory fix, that you have to give us the ability to issue regs on it, if that makes sense. I mean, and the board has fairly wide authority in the field of EMS. It generally can regulate and pass whatever rules it deems appropriate. This example is a good one in which it's just not there.
Any other questions for Sam?
As a final departure, you know, I will say that I represent the board as a whole, and as much as each of you make up a part of that, and I want the board to operate well, if you've got questions individually, by all means reach out to me. I'm happy to answer them as we go. I want you guys to succeed. So, thank you.
All right, Senator.
Now, one quick question. This came back from my being on the commission one time. So as you sit there, Sam, you represent the board. How do you represent Joe in this deal?
As long as Joe's interests don't conflict with yours, then I represent him like I would represent any corporation's employees.
Yeah. Okay.
If there becomes a conflict in which Joe's not doing what you want him to do, my loyalty is to you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, any other questions, concerns? Seeing none, let's call it a wrap. Excellent discussion today, and we'll see you in August. Thank you.